This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
I walked away from that event and I said, these are my people. These are the people that I want to be around, right? These are the individuals that are so invested and committed to the industry that they want to make a difference in people's lives. They want to make a difference in our community. And I said, I'm signing up.
Hello, friends. Welcome back to another fabulous episode of the Color of Money podcast. You are tuned in for a special episode with none other than Natalie Davis. But before I introduce her, of course, I'm joined by my co-host, Bowman Keady, Daniel Dixon. And we're absent Unc. Unc is not with us today, but we will say things that Unc would have said so you don't feel like he's gone, right? But let me introduce Natalie. Natalie is phenomenal and has quite an impressive bio, so I'll just share some of the things. Most recently, though, of course, Natalie, you were serving as the president of the Colorado Association of Realtors. You've had multiple leadership roles. I'll read a bit of your bio. It says, with a passion of leadership and service, you have indeed made significant contributions in real estate. I know that personally, because I've been one of the participants in your NAR at Home with Diversity and Implicit Bias Override courses that you teach. In addition to that, you actually are a national speaker and a business coach, and you ran an independent brokerage, which we call an indie, prior to you bringing your business to Keller Williams in Colorado. You have led a number of different organizations. You've been on the S&P 200 watch list. You've been a Riz Media newsmaker. You've had all kinds of accolades, the South Metro Denver Association Realtor of the Year in 2023, Colorado Young Professional of the Year in 2016, Colorado, so on and so forth. Y'all get the idea. But she is a dynamic leader. She's an inspiring and engaging speaker. And today, that's what we're going to talk to her about. We're going to talk to you specifically about leadership in the wealth building space. So welcome, Natalie. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Julia. I'm excited to be here.
We're excited to have you here. First and foremost, tell us about you. Tell us a little bit about your journey into real estate, where you came from, who you are.
Oh, gosh, that's such a big question. And I feel like you got a pretty robust bio there. I'm not sure how you got like the full bio when you start to put it all together. But as Julia mentioned, I am a licensed real estate practitioner in the state of Colorado. I have been in business for about 15 years now. That is not where I started as a graduate from Baylor University in Texas. I grew up in Texas, attended Baylor University, and I got into the insurance space and spent about 5 years in workers' comp as a claims adjuster. And I will have to tell you that that was not the best choice for me in terms of profession. And I realized that pretty early and stepped out of that space and into the nonprofit world. So I have had a tremendous opportunity to serve as the executive director for a few nonprofit organizations, the last being the Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau before stepping into the world of real estate. So I've had the opportunity to build skill set in terms of the nonprofit philanthropic side of our communities and then stepping into real estate, which I feel was a complete 180, right? Now you go from raising funds to support programs and yourself. Salary to actually just being a independent contractor where you are supporting yourself and working both the front and the back of the house. But real estate itself was something that I never thought that I would get into. I was actually exposed to the investment side of real estate at a very young age. My parents were investors when they moved to the States. We grew up in Texas, as I mentioned, and they, at any given time, managed anywhere between 10 to 15 rental properties as a child. And the reason that I was averse to real estate is that growing up with parents that own rental properties, you spend many of weekends changing locks, painting walls, laying tile. By the time I was 15, I could completely turn over a unit with my dad, just he and I. I don't know if that violates any labor laws, but I was willing. did it. But like having that exposure and seeing how much work was involved in managing rental units for my parents, it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. And I thought, that is something that I will never do. And my first husband and I and my kids, we moved to Colorado in 2010, and we moved to Fort Collins, Colorado. And if you've not been to Fort Collins, it is a beautiful place. And I said, this is a place that I think that we need to plant our roots for some time. It's a great community. It's a college community to start investing in real estate. And my husband at the time said, well, if you're going to start investing in real estate, you need to get your license. And I said, deal, let's make it happen. And so I got my license, and I think the rest is history.
I get the story and the investment space and getting a license. What then made you get into this whole leadership journey inside of our industry?
That is such a great question. I feel like the stars align in this space. The brokerage that I hung my license with when I was a brand new licensee was a realtor office. And I actually had my license, signed my paperwork, and the first thing that they tell you is go down to the local association office and join the association. They'll tell you everything that you need to know there. The time of year that I joined, it was during the annual holiday events. So I went in to pay my dues for the year for the local association, and the staff person in the office said, well, you know, we're having our holiday awards event at the end of the week. Would you like to buy a ticket to that? I said, sure, why not? I know no one in this industry, by the way, right? I'm brand new in the community, brand new to the industry. And I said, sure, why not? Go ahead and add it to my bill, right? You're cutting the check. You might as well just cut the check. And so my very first industry event was the local association holiday annual awards event. And I attended that event not knowing anyone in the room, being completely welcomed by my brokerage, right? We were there. We had a strong presence, many award winners that were part of the brokerage. But hearing about the work that the realtors were doing within the community outreach awards that were given, the production awards, the rookie of the year, the lifetime achievement awards, right? Some of the things that I've been able to achieve that Julie has mentioned, seeing the work that those individuals did for the industry and within our community, I walked away from that event and I said, these are my people. These are the people that I want to be around, right? These are the individuals that are so invested and committed to the industry that they want to make a difference in people's lives. They want to make a difference in our community. And I said, I'm signing up. And so that was my very first experience. As a brand new agent in the community, the thing that I had a tremendous amount of was time. And so I took every opportunity to attend every education session that was offered. So if the local association was offering a rookie training, if they were offering a contracts training, I was there and I was at the association a lot and I was showing up and the staff recognized that. And so when you show up, people start to ask. So I got the tap on the shoulder. Would you like to volunteer on one of our committees? And it was the education committee. And I said, I'd love to. And I got plugged in volunteering on the education committee. The next year, I was tapped on the shoulder to become the vice chair of the education committee. And one of my dear friends, she said, if you'd vice chair it with me, I'll show you everything that you need to know, and then I'll hand everything over to you the following year. I said, great. I had experience, you know, in terms of the nonprofit space, running an organization. I said, it fits in my wheelhouse. I'll do it. Well, 3 months after me saying yes, she got out of the business. So that left me in the chair position a year earlier than I had anticipated. I actually did it. I enjoyed it. And then my journey has not stopped since that time.
People don't normally sign up for leadership. Like you said, all the stars aligned, but they have to align with something that you're first passionate about. What is your passions and what do you feel like your purpose? Talk to us about how you align your business with your purpose and passion.
That has taken some time for me to discover and uncover for myself. Really, the thing that fills my bucket is having the ability to pour into other people. That's the biggest thing. That's what drives me. So you mentioned that I have the opportunity to coach and teach and train on a national scale, coaching on an international scale. Those are opportunities for me to pour into and help other individuals in growing their businesses and building out the lives that they want to have. I am able to sleep so well at night knowing that I have taken that initiative. Now, I know that I'm not going to have a long-lasting impact and effect on absolutely every person. So I go into that with the expectation of if I can change one person's life or help someone change their life, just one person, that it is absolutely in alignment with why I'm here. That's my purpose. In terms of what really drives me in terms of what I say yes to, because we have the opportunity to say yes to many things, I've started to filter things out about 5, maybe 6 years ago when I discovered that if the things that I'm saying yes to does not bring me joy, then I need to turn them down and say no to it. And when I say brings me joy, it does a couple of things. Like, it fills my bucket. I know that I'm going to be able to show up as the best version of myself because it sparks my interest, right? I'm excited about it. It gets me going. But then I've realized that if it brings me joy and it fills my bucket in that respect, when I show up as a better person, I'm showing up in that space as a better individual, and I'm showing up in my personal life as a better individual. My kids were at home during that time. I have two adult daughters now, but I was showing up as a better mom. I was a better partner. I just felt like I was showing up as a better version of me for me when I started to get crystal clear on yes or no if it brings me joy. If it's a maybe, it's a no. It has to be an absolute hard yes. This is going to bring me joy and fulfillment, and then I can move forward with it.
I want to take us back just a little bit. If I'm understanding you correctly, like, you're new to the business. You're like a year or two in the business, and you're like taking over the chair of the education committee.
Yes.
And I just want to I'm going to tap into this like mindset that said, you said it came from this desire to support and pour into others and build others. Yes. So tell us a little bit about how you showed up in an industry and you didn't show up saying, hey, I got to figure this whole thing out. I don't know what I'm doing. Who's going to pour into me? You showed up and immediately said, hey, I can give. Like, how did that, you know, a lot of people get there a long time into their journey.
I don't want it to come off like I started there, because again, I think I'm still on the journey, Bo. So that's a great question. And it's something that I actually still carry forward with me today. I have a pretty good understanding of the skill set and the abilities that I can bring to the table. And even 15 years ago, I was in that space, and I've grown over the years, the last 15 years for sure. But I understood this is what I can bring to the table. If there's a space or a need for that, I'm going to say yes, right? Like, I know if I have the skill set and the ability to help, I'm going to move forward with helping. In terms of initially saying yes from the chair standpoint for the education committee, I think it, for me, it was just a natural progression because of those transferable soft skills that we have. I don't take those for granted, and I know how valuable they are. Coming from the nonprofit space, I had the opportunity to oversee committees and work with committees. I had to report to a board of directors as the executive director. And so having that dynamic of reporting out and also overseeing the work of the organization was something that I had experience with. And so it seemed like a natural fit. And I've carried that forward with me, and I still say it now. Here are the skills that I bring to the table. If you think that I'm the right person to step in and assist, and it aligns with my core value of bringing me joy, then let's do it. But if you think that there's someone else that's better fit to step into that space, my ego has no place at the table. I have no problem stepping aside and letting someone else in to do it.
No, it's beautiful. I mean, I think one of the things that comes up a lot, I know for me in conversations with newer agents, is they're coming to the table. And, you know, it's beautiful telling you, hearing your story of your professional experience. They oftentimes come to the table with a sense that they don't have something to offer, that they're constantly looking for something. And one of my piece of advice we are always trying to tell folks is understand what you have to give. You have something to give from your experience, from your background, from your knowledge, from your natural innate capabilities. And so when you show up in an environment, knowing that you have something to offer and looking for a way to offer that, even if that's not the main thing, it might be a side thing in the environment. When you offer that, that environment tends to pour back into you and fill you up.
Absolutely. I think if you can go into any opportunity, keeping that in mind, if there are actual skill sets that you're bringing to the table, experiences, and it doesn't have to be like a formal setting. A few weeks ago, I had an opportunity to speak to the female athletes at CSU, our university here in Fort Collins. And if you think about a student athlete, the amount of dedication and commitment that a student athlete has, right? They're showing up for practice twice a day. They have to keep their grades up. They're staying in constant communication with their professors. They're networking with one another. And from time to time, they have to maintain some type of social life as well, right? Mm-hmm. And so the skills that they're developing in college are so valuable. And I think they just dismiss it because that's the season of life, right? This is what we do. We're student athletes. This is what we have to do. That's expected of us. Not realizing that they are setting such a tremendous foundation for soft skills and transferable skills that will carry them to great lengths when they enter in the workforce, whatever direction they decide to go.
As a Black woman in Denver across the country representing NAR, CAR, we're very much in a white person's industry. And so taking leadership or lessons or keynotes from a Black woman, I think has to be a challenge. Like, what have you experienced with that? And then how do you get your mind right to know you're walking in these rooms and you're going to fight an uphill battle to start?
Absolutely. That's such a great question, especially in the space that I do quite a bit of my teaching and speaking. I would say probably 60% of my content is in the space of DEIB. And so when...
What is the B?
Belonging. Oh, okay. Diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. Sorry, we're great at acronyms. I apologize. And belonging. Yes. So I do a significant amount of work within that space. And there are a couple of things. And Julia and I have had this conversation offline. Had you told me 15 years ago when I got into the business that we would have a platform to actually have this discussion, to offer education, to offer tools, to offer resources as it pertains to diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, I would be completely floored, right? Because getting into this industry, you're absolutely right. I thought that was something that was put to the side. It was not something that was addressed other than from the legal standpoint, we uphold the fair housing laws.
Yeah.
That's it, right? And so it is really refreshing and empowering and promising to me for our industry to see the work that's taking place, but it is not all rainbows and daisies when you look at it. I've had experiences where I've gone into training sessions and in some associations, it, the course is a requirement because they need the continuing education hours. Yeah. I get all of those things off and out on the table at the very beginning. I typically ask the question right out the gate, what are you hoping to get out of this class? And if your hope is to only get the 6 hours of CE, say that as well. Like, I want to know who's in the room and why are you here? Because that tells me how much you're going to engage. And so I've been in situations where I've had individuals say, I'm here just for the CE. I need to get the continuing education. And there's kind of a little bit of a guard that's up when they enter into any type of course or training because you're not open and curious and wanting to learn and grow and expand, right? When you come in just saying, I need to just simply check the box, then you're probably not in a space where you want to learn. Because of some of the techniques and modalities that I use in teaching, I'm a hands-on person. There's engagement. I'm also an action person. I don't like to speak about these things from a standpoint of theory and wouldn't it be grand if. It is, what can you apply to your business today? So those walls typically start to come down if people are open to investing in themselves and making a commitment to their business and the clients that they're serving. But that's not always the case. I remember wrapping up, it was a smaller intimate group. I think there were 20 of us and we were doing the At Home with Diversity course. So we basically spent the entire day together. And an older gentleman, older white gentleman that came up to me after the entire session was wrapped up. And he said, listen, you are a phenomenal presenter, probably one of the best speakers that I've seen. The content is great. I've been in this business for X number of years. I'm not changing, but your course was great. And so is it a win in my book? Is that the win that I'd want? No. But what keeps me going is knowing that something that he experienced or heard during that day is planted and it's going to resonate. It's not going to be a huge transformational piece, but my thought, or at least what helps me continue throughout and doing this work, is knowing that something, a seed was planted and it's going to make a difference in his life in some way, shape, or form. And the fact that he was at least able to engage throughout the content there. And I want to say this other piece as well in terms of the perception of me or what I think the perception of me will be when I'm stepping into these spaces. For a long time, I refused to go into a space with my external qualifiers first, right? I'm just, here's the person that you've hired on to deliver whatever that may be that I'm delivering. But the reality of it is still there. And the challenges that I face on the road are true. I know that there are spaces where people are not excited for me to be there. I've spoken in parts of the country where I call my daughter and she asks, why would you have accepted to go there, right? Are you not scared for your well-being and your life? And I'm not, because I focus on the work that I'm doing. And so I try not to stay in that kind of that fixed mindset of, you know, well, I don't feel safe or comfortable in this space. Again, if I can break through and have impact on one person, even though there's a room of people that may not be excited to have me there, I still feel like it's a win and a reason that I'm there.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit HomeTeam.com to learn more.
Well, when you think about if we fast forward in the industry another 10, 15 years, do you think that it's more of these classes and teaching and education that's going to change the adoption of working with more minorities in this industry or change the demographics of this industry? Or is it a matter of getting more young minorities into the industry and then support them with tools to help change what this industry is going to become?
Yes. Yes to both. I think it's a yes and. I believe the space for education, there's room for growth. We are just at the tip of the iceberg in terms of what we're introducing to practitioners in this industry right now. And I think from that education, we start to nurture a culture across the board in the industry. We have to continue to do the work in terms of education and understanding and really open communication from a standpoint of like respect and curiosity for the other person's opinion so that we can start to develop this culture where we all feel like we belong and are part of this industry that has a huge impact on all of our communities, and then bringing in the next generation, because there's a big gap. Mm-hmm. When you look at underserved communities and specifically future minority entrepreneurs, looking at real estate, it's not necessarily something that seems to be achievable or attainable. And so I think there's a tremendous amount of work that needs to happen in that space to educate our future entrepreneurs, our future leaders on the possibilities of what they can do, and letting them know that some of the roadblocks that their parents, those of us of this age on the call, their parents, their experiences may not necessarily be the experiences that they have moving forward. That's my hope. That is my hope. And, you know, and maybe it's pie in the sky, but that's my hope.
Yeah. So in that space, maybe just one other question in this area, like progress, if you look at the history of this country, you know, progress goes in waves and then retrenchments. You know, we had the Emancipation Proclamation, then we had Reconstruction.
Yes.
Like even in our recent political cycles, we go one way and then we come back.
Right.
And so I'm very interested in how you think about this, just with your thoughtfulness as leaders in the space that kind of came into a space on a wave of interest in this issue and are now facing significant retrenchment and headwinds around this issue. How do you think about your role as a leader in the space, and how does that change, and how do you hold that in a moment like this?
My initial gut response is that I want to say that it doesn't change. And then I want to go to, you know, then we've got to just double down. But I don't think either of those are really the reality of where I am in terms of where I think that we're moving forward from where we are today. I think when we look at our role and what we're looking at, as exhausting as it may seem, it's an opportunity for us. And I've said, you know, being able to enter into conversations and from a place of respect and having discussion with, you know, people that have different viewpoints. It's easy to say that. It is a significant level of maturity to actually be able to execute that. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about the culture piece of the shift that we need to see, we're not there yet. Everyone's on edge, regardless of topic, issue, political beliefs, like whatever you look at that across the board, that we're teetering on the edge of extremes on every subject area that's out there. And so my invitation, not just for us, but for anyone listening, is to truly challenge yourself to be able to sit down and have conversations. And it's hard for me. I'll say they're not all easy conversations. There are some conversations that I sit and my blood pressure is rising and I think, there's no way that anyone thinks like this. But again, I have that reminder of be curious, right? So like, how can I be curious and respectful for this individual? Like, this is their experience and this is their belief and their understanding and their truth in that moment. How can I continue to show up but not diminish or soften what I believe to be true for myself as well? And it all comes back to, it's something that I said when I was serving as the president for the Colorado Association. Whatever decision we make has to be in the best interest of the membership, period. And so as we're having these discussions, what is in the best interest for us collectively? If it's an industry discussion, if it's a community discussion, if we're looking at it from a national standpoint, what is in the best interest of the people? And it may or may not align with our views. And I think that's a level of maturity that we all need to aspire to get to, is understanding it doesn't align with how I believe, but it's what's in the best interest of for the people. And that's a philosophy that I just continue to carry forward.
So we've talked a little bit about leadership on sort of an industry or a national stage.
Yeah.
You had an opportunity to lead an independent brokerage office.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about your journey to that? And then, you know, any reflections you have on sort of operational leadership versus sort of industry or association leadership?
Yes, I have more passion for industry and association leadership for sure. I will tell you that. And here's my journey. I actually worked as an independent agent for about 8 years, 7.5, 8 years before actually moving. My family and I, we were in Northern Colorado. My ex-husband's position transferred down to the Denver metro area, which is about 60, 70 miles away if we're looking at like geographic area. And so I saw this as an opportunity to truly just create, because I was starting a new business in a new market, even though we were 1.5 hours away from where I had previously built my business, completely different markets. And we always talk about competency within our market space. So I thought, here's my opportunity. I'm in a new market. What do I want my business to look like? And so I envisioned having an office, a brokerage, a team of agents, a group of individuals that work together. I mean, truly collectively work together in terms of mastermind for marketing and messaging and support moving forward. And I had an opportunity to open, as you mentioned, an independent brokerage. And in that space, I learned quite a bit. There are things that you do really well as an independent agent when you're building a successful, what I think, the skill set that you need to build a successful business. And then there are the skills that you need to not only maintain that business, but now lead a group of agents that are within your office. And then you have to also do great in managing and running the back end of that office and whatever that's going to look like, however you're structured that. And in my instance, I had a brick and mortar office space. So I was also great at being the janitor and replacing the lights and making sure that we had coffee in the break room. And so all of these hats that you're wearing, and I realize I am pulling myself thin and stretching well past the space that I know that I operate and function well in. And in that instance, it was, if you talk to me about sales and running a business, I can absolutely do that. If you talk to me about leadership, I can absolutely do that. And then we had the 60% of the business that I would just avoid doing at all costs. And you can't do that as a business owner, right? And you can't avoid that. And so I found myself just regretting, or it's like going in with a grudge, right? What is that? Like going into some of these tasks or the things that we needed to do begrudgingly. So for me, owning a brokerage, being an independent brokerage owner, I learned what I liked and what I didn't like, right? I got very crystal clear on that. I was also able to see what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. I think that's a hard thing, because once you bite off such a big piece and you look up and you realize, you, Natalie, you suck at fill in the blank. No one wants to sit and look at themselves in the mirror and realize that you're not really good at it. And so I had to take that moment to say, you're not really excelling in this space, and it's hurting the other agents within your office because of that. And then introduce the pandemic, because then we got hit with, you know, right, the pandemic and everything that we knew changed on a dime.
I love that Bo asked that question, because a lot of times, particularly our listeners in this community, people want the title of being their own broker. They want to own their own thing, right? Yeah. And in the spirit of Unc not being here, I know he always says, a lot of times people want to be the broker, but they end up being broker than everybody else, right?
That's right. And 100%, yes.
Comes from a space of lack of not having ownership in things. And people, yes, have a strong desire to have an ownership in something. They'll say a lot of times, I want to be the OP. They don't know what that means. I'm going to leave. Right. I'm going to go start my own brokerage because I want my own thing. And so you're saying, I gave that up because I realized it wasn't serving me or the agents that were with me. But can you talk just a little bit to the people, because we have a ton of them that are listening, yeah, right now, that are saying, I'm leaving Keller Williams. I'm doing this on my own. I'm going to start my own thing. People are cheering me on. They're championing. And I'm not saying not to do it, but I'm, exactly, just saying, what are some things that you would have people to consider before they do it, just so they can have the title of saying they own it, or they're the, yes, broker, you know, or, yes, whatever that might be? Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I think it would be two things. If you are venturing out and you have not historically run your own independent business like a business,
or run anything. A lot of times these people have run nothing. Right.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You're going to start off at a disadvantage. I'm not going to say that it's not going to work, but you definitely are at a disadvantage. And when I say, like, as real estate agents, I would venture to say that the majority of real estate agents, practitioners, don't run their business like a business, right? If you ask them, are you setting a budget for your business at the beginning of each year? Or are you just simply saying, my goal is X number of transactions or this in GCI, but you're not looking at your marketing expenses and you have no idea what the cost per client is when you're looking at buyers and sellers, or what you actually have to invest to keep your independent business up and running. The only thing that's going to happen when you step into that brokerage stand piece is that everything is going to be amplified. And now you have other individuals that are looking to you for support, guidance, instruction as well. The second piece of that, so that's number one. If you're not currently running your business like a business, at least start there before you venture out to try to run a brokerage or you're creating your own. The second piece is if you're going to open a brokerage where you're bringing other agents on into your office, knowing that they're looking for value from you. So if you're simultaneously trying to figure out how to run a business and also determine what you're providing in value to those agents, you are pushing a ball uphill nonstop, right? That's never going to end unless you collaborate with other individuals, find mentors to help. I mean, there are ways to absolutely work through it. I think those are probably the two areas of weakness that I see for individuals that are stepping into that space because they just don't know. And even if you don't think that you want to bring agents on, I see it time and time again. You get a call from somebody that says, I know that you don't have any agents, but can I just hang my license with you? Right? It always happens. And then they start with one. And then they wake up and they have six. And they don't know how they got six agents. And they don't have sales meetings. They don't have marketing material. No one's really overlooking the books. And again, you're not setting yourself up for the most success, but you do have the title of broker. And I guess good on you. But do you have the fulfillment and everything else that can potentially come with it if you're doing it well, building it well?
Yeah. You want to own things until it's time to pay all the bills. And it's like,
maybe not.
Exactly. Exactly.
And owning can be good or bad. Sometimes you own something, you pay bills. Sometimes you own something, you make money, right? It's like there's two sides to that story. I think it's really cool, though, this idea. I don't know if this is something that you have a perspective on. I always say that this ability to be both a work of art and a work in progress, and the difficulty of holding that, like the ability to look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm Natalie and I'm phenomenal. Like, we get to see you as this phenomenal, amazing woman with all these talents, these things. And you're able to hold that presence, that strength, that confidence in yourself, but also look at yourself and say, yeah, I'm not so good at that. This is my weak areas. Do you have any perspective for people as we walk through life? Because we tend to, like, I know I find myself living in one of those areas or the other. I'm either looking in the mirror and going, here's everything that's wrong with me. Gosh, I stink. I'm horrible. Or I'm like, yeah, I'm the best thing ever. Right? We kind of live these highs. And the ability to really grow and develop, like, lies in the ability to hold those two competing things so solidly that we are both a beautiful work of art, and yet we are a work in progress and we have opportunities to improve.
That's beautiful in how you've said that, because when I think about it, how I show up, I think what the world sees is one thing. They don't see the work that's happening behind the scenes as well. Because like you say, that work in progress, it is a work in progress. For me, I still have goals that I want to achieve. I still have professional and personal development that I do for myself. In terms of my own personal practice, my morning routine is very, very sacred to me. I have a goal of meditating at least 300 times this year, right? So that's for me to have that quiet moment, those introspective time to do the reflection. I have the best downloads during that time, most of the time when I go into that space. It also gives me a time to be in a place of gratitude every day for most of the time, right? And I say that I do that 300 times a day because I'm giving myself room for error. It's not going into the year saying I'm meditating
65.
Exactly. 65. There's some margin for error in there, right? So I'm going to miss a day or two throughout the year. But again, that's having grace and compassion for yourself as you're doing it. And I'm constantly learning from other individuals around me. If I am attending an education session or a conference, even as attending a conference as a speaker, I take the time out to listen to other presenters as they're sharing, because there's always room for growth. That's the way that I look at it for myself, is that there's always room for growth if it's professionally or personally. And so when we talk about that work of art piece, what I would say is if you can just embrace the what else is possible mentality when you're thinking about yourself, because you can show up as the greatest version of yourself, but what else is possible? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, what if you just invested a little bit more in your business, with your family, for yourself, your own self-care? What else is possible? Like, what version of you would show up then? That we're constantly like working on that work of art piece, because sometimes we dismiss it. We don't want to work on it, the working piece of it. We just want to create what everyone sees. I think if you can just embrace that, what else is possible, it will propel you, continue to propel you.
I'm switching gears again, because you've mentioned something before we went live that I didn't know. I just learned something new. You mentioned that you are an immigrant and a first generation immigrant. Can you talk to us about that and becoming to America and all of the things? Where are you from?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for that question. I'm happy to dive into that piece of it, because not many people know. I've held it pretty close to the chest for a long time, and I'm no longer doing that. I was born in Jamaica. And so coming to America from a developing country, I think it has an impact and influence on everything that I do. When I say this, I mentioned like how important my morning routine is for me. Being able to enter into every day from a place of gratitude just by simply being here, right? It's a tremendous opportunity. I feel that that's something that I automatically step into. I moved to the States when I was 3 years old, so very young. My parents also immigrated to the States. Both of my parents were nurses. We were very much like middle class America. But the understanding from my parents for me growing up in Texas is, you're in America, you're American now. And there are some things that I'm still working through in terms of what I've experienced and how it's shaping the person that I am today. One of the very first things that I remember, though, is going to preschool. And I went to a private Christian preschool in Texas. Create your narrative there. But one of the first things that I experienced in terms of being picked on was my accent, because I had a strong Jamaican accent, right? Coming over, so that those were my people. That's all I knew. And so here I am in Texas, where there's a strong Texas Southern accent as well in Texas. And I dropped it. I dropped my Jamaican accent so quickly. I don't think I picked up a Texas accent at all. And it has carried forward, because even just as I'm speaking and connecting with people across the country from different platforms, the question that I often get is, well, where are you from? Right? Because I've created this like non-regional dialect that people don't, they're like, we don't know. We have no idea where you're from. And if I say Texas, and the next question is like, no, that doesn't make sense. It's because I'm not having enough, there's not enough drawl in it.
Not enough twang in that thing.
I'm able to like say that jokingly now. I've done a lot of processing on it. But when you are an immigrant, and again, this is early 80s, so just to kind of age me, early 80s coming to the States, the understanding is that you're in America, you become American, you kind of shed everything that you are. But my family, when I was at home with my family, we had this very tight-knit group of probably 10 other Jamaican families that we would get together at least once a month. We would celebrate all holidays together. We would get together and celebrate birthdays of the kids. And so I had this Jamaican culture within my household that I maintained, but that persona was left at my home. And then when I walked out the door, I was someone else, right? So I felt like I was navigating life with two different personalities, right? There was the at-home version of me, and then there was the public-facing version of me. And that's challenging, because fast forward to like my 30s, and I get into that existential crisis of like, who am I? Like, why am I dropping who I am? And how much of myself have I really shed to just be this American version of myself? And a lot of it is sad, you know, because I feel that I've lost a lot of my customs and traditions, but I've adopted great ones, right? I definitely have embraced some of the culture just living here. And then having kids is the opposite side. So for me, I'm kind of that balancing piece. For my parents, they didn't know the American culture and customs. For me, going through high school, homecoming, prom, dances, not a thing. Those are not things that happen in Jamaica. And so I had to educate and experience and navigate all at the same time, educating my parents on what it is, why we do it, why it's important. And then trying to convince them, because as traditional old school Jamaican parents, none of that really mattered anyway. And then having the opportunity to be there for my daughters as they experience life, and they've just experienced like an American lifestyle. And I think that's the other part of it that's sad, is that they've also lost touch with a lot of the customs and traditions that I would have grown up with had I still been on the island. But nothing that I regret, more that introspective, reflective piece. All of it, bringing it back to the leadership piece, I think a lot of that weighs on me as being kind of the charge that I received from my family, right? Like, you're the American now. You're going to carry on the family lineage by establishing yourself, experience success, whatever that looks like, fill in the blank. But there's like this unspoken expectation that kind of carries on that I have on my shoulders. I'm still working through it. I'll let you know. I don't go to therapy, but maybe I should.
I think that's great. Recently, we've been having a lot of conversations with people who have shared similar, you know, things about their individuality and finding themselves and being comfortable with who you are, so on and so, which is what this podcast is about. And I think a lot of people in the Black culture in general can share that same experience of, I'm Black at home, but then I have to go and whatever people might call it, code switch, or you do whatever they do.
Oh, look at you dropping the new terms. Okay.
I saw that. I've been working on my terminology.
I like it. Well, that's because the term didn't exist 5 years ago. There was no code. We didn't have a name for it. But we did it.
People experience, you know, and even getting into the spaces of business to excel and feeling like that. We've had that conversation a lot, which is why we've invited you here, because this podcast is for people who have had shared experiences like yours and who have been historically marginalized. And that's what the Color of Money podcast is sharing the success, the journey, and having conversations that help transform people's lives so we can all build wealth together. So thank you for being here to help engage in that conversation. Any last words, Natalie? What's the one thing you would want the listeners to take from this conversation?
I think the one thing that I would really invite everyone to dive into understanding is one of the very first questions that you asked, Julia, their purpose and their why. I'm fortunate that I was able to start this journey and discovering my purpose, discovering my why, and then actually being able to live it out. It's a magical place once you get there. It's still challenging, but it's a magical place when you get there versus doing what you think is just the next thing that needs to be done. Mm-hmm. I spent the vast majority of my life doing the next thing that was expected of me or the next logical thing that needed to be done. As I shared, like, my journey through leadership, it's non-traditional. When you look at it, serving in the leadership roles that I'm serving in now and individuals realizing I've only been in the business 15 years, good, bad, or indifferent, there's still a school of thought of 15 years in the industry is not really that significant in terms of the amount of time that you've invested in the industry. But I can stand pretty strong in knowing these are the skills that I bring to the table. Here are my strengths. Also, here are my weaknesses, because if you're going to ask me to do something within this space that's a weakness, I'm not going to say yes to it. But the sooner that you can align with your purpose, your why, and then finding a way to live in that every single day, I think it's a beautiful place to and way to experience life. That would be my one piece of advice.
Thank you. And I just want to make sure we plug your podcast, because you also have a podcast. Quickly tell us about that and how we can listen to it.
I do. Oh my gosh. Yep. Thank you for that. So the name of the podcast is Reignite Resilience, and it is a podcast all about overcoming adversity. And you can find it on all streaming platforms. So your favorite Apple Pod, Spotify, we're on YouTube now. We will be incorporating video here soon. Or if you can't find it, go to ReigniteResilience.com and it will guide you over to all of the streaming platforms.
Thank you so much, Natalie. Thank you for being here. And thank you all for taking time out to listen to another fantastic episode of the Color of Money podcast. We'll catch y'all next week. Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.